This is Structured Rambling, a podcast about ideas from literature and about literature. Episodes can focus on a single text or a theme from multiple texts. My name is Paul Sonsby. Welcome.
In the 80s, I had a cousin, well, I still do, but in the 80s, I had a cousin with HBO. It was common for my brothers and I to come in from the farm and spend a day at his house, and invariably, at some point, we'd watch a movie. It was the 80s, and we all had a taste for that era's science fiction, but this was also a lot of golden age horror films and 80s military glorification action films. I saw a lot of movies at this cousin's house that I was probably too young to see, and more than a few of them actually got to me. I still get sick to my stomach when I think about that young baseball player crushed by the steamroller in Maximum Overdrive, and that's a movie that does not deserve to hold a place in your head. My repressed fear of zombies, I don't know, it's pressed now. Zombies are done to me. Zombies are dead to me. But I had a phobia for a while, but thank you, Hollywood, for milking zombies to the point of rolling my eyes at the mere mention of the undead. So it's pressed now. But anyways, I think it took root in various Of the Dead sequels that I saw at too young an age, as well as splatterfest kung fu films from the great 70s hangover era into the 80s from Hong Kong. This readied me for later appreciation of Quentin Tarantino. But one of the ones that stands out as a great memory is seeing for the first time on HBO at my cousin's house, shout out Graham, James Cameron's 1984, The Terminator. It was and is a pretty special film. Yes, a film with Arnold Schwarzenegger is being called special on a literature podcast, and I stand by that. I would guess I was 8 or 9, which, yeah, is a little young for a movie full of gore and a teeny bit of nudity, but there it is. The thing about the 7 years between Terminator movies is, in a young kid's life, that's an eon. I went from a child to an early teen in between Terminator movies. Cameron's first movie is a relatively low-budget sci-fi horror flick with lots of guns. I'm sure at the time I knew who Arnold Schwarzenegger was already, but I don't remember and I don't think I had seen the Conan movies before seeing The Terminator. I can't recall, but I don't think so. And this was his greatest role, which doesn't say much because the man isn't much of an actor, but this is the role he was born to play because he just has to be a robot. I can only say he did okay in comedy for a bit. Okay, so, you know, Schwarzenegger, he can pull off funny, and he should more often. But playing an intimidating killer robot, perfect. No, we won't really ever understand why these killer robots have, you know, Austrian accents, but then we're about to have a decade of movies following this where a New York cop or a U.S. Marine or a CIA agent all have Austrian accents, and nobody ever asks. Heck, in Predator, he has an Austrian accent, and his name is Dutch. There wasn't logic involved. And even when James Cameron is involved, let's practice the number one rule of Schwarzenegger films. Don't overthink it. Don't try to think too much about it. It's easy to poke holes in the plots of these films, from their basic concept all the way to their story to much of the acting. These are better than most of the brainless fare of their ilk and of the era, though, so credit where credit is due. First and foremost, these science fiction action films, but let's not neglect to recognize that they're also brain-baking time travel movies. The concept of the first film is simple. After a nuclear war, machines take over the world and attempt to erase the greatest threat to the world, humans. we end up winning a war against them because of a resistance leader named John Connor. And in a desperate effort, the machines send a Terminator back through time, because they know how to do that. This Terminator is a robot with living human flesh that they technically call a cyborg, a cybernetic organism, although it's just a robot in human flesh, but whatever. C-3PO says he's a cyborg, so what do I know? The humans send back a lone warrior to stop the Terminator from killing 19-year-old Sarah Connor, the woman who will someday be Resistance leader John's mommy. Like I said, don't poke holes. Don't ask why the machines don't kill Sarah when she's a baby, or her parents, or her grandparents. We're told records are lost, but these films don't hold up to tight scrutiny, especially when rationalizing the second one's existence at all. Oh, and it's wise for us to ignore subsequent sequels pretty much completely. I'm only talking about the two James Cameron films because I rewatched them with my kids. Kyle Reese is the human warrior slash exposition supplier sent to save Sarah. He later reveals that he fell in love with her in a photo that he has of her in the future. Which, well, like I said, don't plot point holes in the plot, but stalkery? Time travel-y stalkery? It's a photo we see taken at the end of the film when she's pregnant with Kyle's son. Time travel twist? He's sent back in time by his own son in order to father him. Time travel. It's weird. The second film is a sequel, but it made the time travel concept, made the whole concept really tricky. Because the machines send Terminators back to two different points. One before John is born and one when he is a 10-year-old kid. The humans are able to send a lone protector back. Why one of each only is unclear. Why each faction can only send back one time traveler is unclear. Though we are told many other things, like why they don't have clothes or weapons, because it can only be organic material, and because the Terminator robot is wrapped up in flesh and he's wrapped up in organic material. So the other, about a week ago, I've been introducing my kids to some of the classics. If you listen, a frequent listener, you know that we watched Predator, because they're old enough now. So I said, you know what, guys, I've been meaning to watch this one with you. And Terminator and Terminator 2 are two of my favorites of the era. And so we watched the first one, and they loved it. They loved it. They thought it was great. In fact, they insisted I was going to make them marinate with it for a bit, because I had to wait 7 years, but we watched the second one right after it. Same night. Yep, it was a Friday. I was tired. There was pizza. What are you going to do? Watching the movies with my kids was cool because they knew nothing about these movies save the cultural references that they had picked up. You know, so like some of the most famous lines when they appeared, the I'll be backs, the come with me if you want to lives, the hasta la vistas babies. They knew those. They were pretty sure the Schwarzenegger character was the bad guy in the first one because he had already ripped some punk's heart out and shot down a gun store owner in a very American irony in the first half hour. They knew he was bad. But it's still not clear in this movie until the shootout in the disco where Kyle shows up that Kyle is the good guy. We don't really understand the motivations. T2 was totally spoiled for me before I saw it in 1991. Ads and magazines at the time told that Schwarzenegger's character was a reprogrammed Terminator sent back to protect John from a new and improved liquid metal thing called the T-1000. Why didn't either side do this the first time? I said, don't overthink it. The moment where the two Terminators meet in Judgment Day in T2, in a mall, in a back hallway with John and a whole lot of Pepsi product placement between them, Arnie says, get down, and then the two fight. This is a revelation that the Terminator that Arnie plays is not going to kill John, at least not now. But even at that moment, my younger son said, I have no idea what's going on. And I thought, this is awesome. They don't know who's the bad guy yet. They fell for what you should have fallen for on your first view of this movie. But because it was ruined at the time it was released, for me, they got it. this is just like when we first watched Empire Strikes Back together. And Vader said, "No, I am your father." Many people misquote that. My kids went, "What?" It was awesome. My kids didn't know that Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father until he was revealed it in The Empire Strikes Back. How many people? Even in 1980. Oh, these are awesome moments. Time kills. All spoilers, maybe. Let's wonder. Anyways, T2 isn't so much a sequel as it is an homage. 7 years separate the movies, and in the narrative, it's 10 years later. The movie set in 1994. The first was, like I said, a relatively low-budget second outing by a rookie director. The only thing he directed before that was Piranha 2. And it featured basically unknown actors, one known persona, but not necessarily a big actor in Hollywood. Not in, by any means who he was going to become in Arnold Schwarzenegger. The second film had an immense budget. The director with massive hits under his belt and the biggest action star, possibly actor, and I put that in quotation marks, in the world. Yes, story-wise, it's a sequel, but the first few opening scenes are shot-for-shot parallels of the first movie, and my kids were pointing that out. Well, this is just like. Yeah, there's so many echoes. It's almost like he's remaking the film he wanted to make in the first place. He's doing the first movie the way he would have if he'd had the money for it. So after that hallway scene, and one of the best car chases in movie history, and each of these movies has several car chases, T2 becomes its own movie. One of the greatest action movies ever, and one of the groundbreakers in the use of computer-generated imagery on film. And it still stands up visually and action-wise. I don't know if what we watched it on... there must have been an improvement, because I owned T2 on VHS in the 90s, in like 1992, and I remembered certain shots even going, that looks kind of fake, and they didn't look as fake to me in this reviewing, and that's not just nostalgia talking. I think it was a remastered slightly version, or maybe just a better quality TV, I don't know. Anyways, the special effects still add up. Still hold up. One of the things I'm proud to say that I took for granted, though, this is actually the main reason I made this episode, is I'm always struck by the fact that I wasn't struck by something as a kid. And no, this isn't a praise of ignorance. This is a praise of not fall. We'll see. I wasn't put off in the slightest by Linda Hamilton in either film. At 7 years of age or whatever it was, and at 13 years of age or whatever it was. I've started noticing with surprise and delight things from my childhood, things which modern detractors like Jordan Peterson would call woke. Active feminism or diversity, or even inactive feminism and diversity, are now being attacked by Peterson and his like, because they're trying to turn progress back on itself because they're dinosaurs. When I first saw these movies, I didn't think a thing about Hamilton's role. Granted, in the first one, she's mostly a damsel in distress until the very end, but her character is also a 19-year-old kid. Grains of salt. In the last act of the film, Kyle is injured and she says, "Move it, soldier," embracing her role as this warrior, savior, mother figure. And her final confrontation with the machine is full of pathos and strength. And she says, "You're terminated." And then she swears. And I try not to swear on this podcast, and I'm not going to do it in quotation. The movie ends with her in a Jeep, pregnant, with a gun across her lap, a dog next to her in the seat, recording her thoughts to her son. In the movie that made Arnie a star, the narrative ends with a strong mother looking to an uncertain or certainly cynical future. I don't recall the controversy that surrounded her with Terminator 2, but I wasn't even 14 yet. Arnie had a big budget movie, GNR was in the soundtrack, I was distracted by all of that. I guess there were people who mocked Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, but I'm fortunate enough to miss that. Jordan Peterson was still crawling out of the swamp in shell form, so he wasn't able to attack it. I'm sure there's probably evidence of him attacking it, but whatever. But when Linda Hamilton, Warrior Woman, hit the screen, I wasn't distracted, I wasn't bothered, I didn't even really think about it. I remembered thinking even at the time that hers was the best character arc. A Terminator who learns why humans cry is fine, but don't ask Arnie to act. And a child star is fine, but a woman, and keep in mind in the narrative, she's only 29 at the time, who had her youth ripped away and became a commando expert who laments a lost love, tries to love, but more importantly, protect her son, who nearly kills a man in front of his family because he inadvertently created Skynet, which creates, well, the Terminators and the nuclear war. She's by far the most compelling character. But I guess in 91, there were two camps. The first saw her ripped warrior characterization as a joke. They felt that she would had been Schwarzeneggerized. It was, I learned later, ridiculed by some. I was in the other camp without even knowing it existed at the time. This camp thought she deserved awards. I don't know if it's an award-worthy performance, but considering that 5 years prior, James Cameron had directed Sigourney Weaver to an Oscar nomination in Aliens 2, again, a lead woman in a male-dominated action film, a male-dominated genre, these were big things. Like, even 10 years after Terminator 2, when Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie came out, people were still wondering, in 2001... people were still wondering if a female protagonist can make a movie successful. Like, it's mind-boggling that these are conversations that have ever been had, but in 1991 and 1984, that makes it a lot more significant. And considering how absolutely jacked she gets for this role, you know, there's I've seen clips in the years since of her and Schwarzenegger flexing off screen and comparing muscles and him teaching her. Like, she committed to this role, and she's the only one who acts, right? She's the only one capable of any acting and who gets to act, really, in this film. I'm sorry. I can't look at James Cameron without looking at James Cameron 2023, the guy who directed Titanic and Avatar. James Cameron is a bit of an arrogant D-bag, but let's give him some credit. Many of his films feature compelling female protagonists, and those that don't often have female characters as compelling as the male. You remember Rose over Jack from Titanic. And Jamie Lee Curtis is way more fun than Arnie in True Lies. Although True Lies is, if a big budget blockbuster can be underrated, only in James Cameron's canon could it be. It's one of his most underrated films. It's definitely his most fun. But Jamie Lee Curtis is great in that film. That was what struck me on this 2023 rewatch with my two teenage boys. The strength of a woman in a masculine, ultra-masculine movie. And because my kids are... well, is it... Just a second. No, it's not ultra-masculine. You deserve better than that, Mr. Cameron. The genre is ultra-masculine. Having Schwarzenegger play a robot means he's technically neutered. But that aside, it These are within a masculine genre, less masculine than most, although still. There's no gripping handshake like in Predator, but still, that's not exactly in touch with its feminine side too much. Linda Hamilton's character's strength comes from how, quote-unquote, stereotypically masculine she is. But anyways, because my kids are from a better generation, at least the members of their generation not susceptible to the rantings of Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan and their like, they didn't even notice. They just saw that this was the star of the movie, who wasn't the robot, was this woman. The first two Terminator films, The Terminator and Terminator 2 Judgment Day, are just fine science fiction action films with a touch of horror. T2 is one of the greatest of its genre, up there with Predator. You know, Schwarzenegger knew how to pick them. They're both significant entries in the time travel subgenre as well. Everything that follows them in the Terminator franchise, and those that I've actually seen, and I think I've seen all but one of them, I'm sad to say, they're garbage. Absolutely every one of them is garbage. Garbage, garbage, garbage. The only thing noteworthy is it's where Christian Bale's off-screen rant at the sound guy came from. That's all you got. They're garbage. And I haven't seen the one where Linda Hamilton comes back, but I'm going to guess it's garbage. Anyways, as with most good movies of my youth, Goonies, E.T., The Princess Bride, it totally holds up. And the modern generation has told me I'm right through two intelligent and charming young men.
I want to thank you for listening today. And if you enjoyed my podcast, please feel free to give me a rating and review. Episodes come out at the beginning and middle of pretty much every month. Have a great day.